Hi, everyone. A very warm welcome to all our listeners to Season 7 of the Big Unlock podcast. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'm your co-host, along with Rohit, who will be missing the podcast today. And today, we are very happy to have with us Linda Stevenson. She's the Chief Information Officer at Fisher Titus Health, where she leads enterprise technology strategy for a community-based health system. She has over 30 years in healthcare IT, and she has worked across organizations like Cleveland Clinic, Cerner, and regional hospitals. And her work has focused on integrating core systems, particularly EHR and telehealth. She's especially passionate about advancing innovation in rural and community health systems, where resources are constrained, but impact is critical. So we're really looking forward to our conversation today. And welcome once again, Linda, to the podcast. Thank you
for
being
here. Thanks for having me.
So I gave an introduction, but, you know, feel free to add anything you would like to that, or if you feel I missed out on anything.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of a background on me and my organization, I guess. Fisher Titus Health Center is a rural healthcare organization in Northwest Ohio. So it's called Norwalk, Ohio. Okay. And we're a 100-bed hospital facility. So not a large hospital, but we certainly have a lot of offering from across the span of a patient's life, all the way from birth, all the way to end of life, with nursing home care, skilled nursing, home health. We have a large physician practice group. So we really do span a whole lot of care delivery areas. I talk about doing more with less. So Fisher Titus, I mean, that's what happens in rural healthcare. And we are technically a rural healthcare organization. Our job is to figure out how to do things for less money, but still get the same outcomes and have the same technologies as the larger organization. So I love being in rural healthcare because I get to do all these very challenging and creative solutions. And to that end, as of March, the beginning of March, I am now also the COO at the organization as well, handling not only technology group, cybersecurity, but also all of our ancillary services, facilities, and cleaning services. So,
wow, congratulations for that. That's Thanks. Great. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Linda, as I was going over your profile, you know, I was realizing that you have somewhat of an unconventional background for people who are usually in this position. So we would love to hear like your origin story, what brought you into healthcare and how do you, you know, find where you are. And I remember when I talked to you, I was really, you know, that line really hit me hard where you said that you have to sometimes reach out and ask for things and you just can't wait for, you know, just sit back and wait for people to tell you what to do. You have to be confident in your own abilities. So tell us a little bit more about that. Would love to hear.
Sure. I wasn't always that way. I started in healthcare as a biller, typing bills yeah. out on a typewriter back in the day before all the automation that we have happened. And I found that my passion was asking questions. And when I was in that department, I was always asking, but why is this and why is that? And then the technology department saw that and said, oh, well, that's the making of a good analyst, right? So brought me into the technology for the first time very early in my career. I did not have a computer background at all from an education Whoa. Standpoint. Okay. My education was in management, useless degree in business management. But I found that it certainly helped me later in my career as I worked into things like project management. I had to really build relationships and build stakeholder relationships with everybody. So from that days of an analyst going into things like project management and data security, and then larger and larger implementations of EMRs. I worked at the Epic implementation when it initially rolled out at Cleveland Clinic. And then had the privilege of working for Cerner, which was Cerner at the time, not Oracle Health, for 3.5 years, really learning what the vendor side looks like at a hospital stationed in their IT Works division. And then here I am as CIO years later. Who would have thought, right? But I always tell everybody, if you're not really sure, say yes. Because every single opportunity that I said yes to, that I was even afraid to do, or thought maybe it's not my job to do, every time I said yes, it was an opportunity that opened another door to me to learn something new that got me where I am today.
Great. That reminds me of, you know, I forget who said that, but I was reading an interview and the person said, just jump into the pool, you know, and then you'll figure it out the rest of the thing. So
that's how the COO role came about. That gentleman was retiring and I just went to my boss, the CEO, and I said, hey, put my hat in the ring. I had no idea what I'm doing, right? I'll figure it out.
Yeah, awesome. So, Linda, like you mentioned, you've seen the full stack of hospital operations, you know, right from billing to like all the way to IT leadership. Mm-hmm. So how has that kind of shaped your view of what a CIO should prioritize today? Should it be innovation? Should it be cost control? Should it be operational reliability? Tell us a little bit more about that, what your priorities are and how do you balance like these conflicting things?
The easy answer is yes, it's all of that, okay. Right? I don't think we can choose one thing. And I think that's yet the challenge and the beauty of what we get to do. I think the bottom line is partnership. Mm-hmm. So partnering with all of the other leaders, whether that's our nursing leaders, our financial leaders, our operational leaders, partnering with all of them to understand what challenges they have. And in some areas, the challenge might be optimization or productivity improvement to allow, I'll give you an example, in our therapy departments have a hard time recruiting right now. They cannot find therapists. Mm-hmm. So how do we enable and use technology to allow the therapists that we do have to do their work faster, still providing the same quality as they always have, but giving them the tools to do things quicker so they can move on and see more patients because we can't find. It's not because we want to lay off people. It's because we can't even find them to begin with, right? And then in some areas, you're looking at how do I cut costs? Maybe some of the solutions they used in doing application rationalizations, how do we really hone in on using the solutions we have better and more optimized and get the most for our money in those things? And then, of course, the final thing is automation. Some of it's just to make lives better, mm-hmm. whether that's better for the patient to get access to care or it's better for providers to enable them to maybe have less stress in their day. And less burnout, you know, so it really is all of it. And you just have to understand and know your audience.
Great. So, you know, following the same path, you've talked about bringing Fisher Titus back to most wired status and like kind of talked about that a little bit in your other interviews. So how do you kind of ensure that, you know, this is actually based on measurable clinical or operational outcomes rather than just like what we heard at Vive was those new shiny objects where everyone's going after AI and trying to plug AI and just make it look good?
Well, first of all, I'm kind of a very practical person. And I remember when AI, about 2 years ago, when we're still all talking about AI, but back then when it was just beginning, everybody was talking about, what's your AI strategy? Mm-hmm. And I've been around this industry long enough to know that AI is just another tool. We've mm-hmm. had lots of tools. We had, you know, cloud was a buzzword for a while. And, you know, EMR was a big thing initially. There's lots of things that come and go mm-hmm. in our world. Yes, this one might be a little bit more impactful than some of the ones we've had in the past. So the way I look at it is I don't have an AI strategy. I have a strategy. And the organization has a strategy and we have a technology strategy to support that bigger strategy. And it may involve AI and it may not involve AI. Depends on what the need is, right? So I look at it much more from a practicality standpoint. But then I go back to what we just talked about, partnering with those leaders in each area. What problem are you trying to solve? Then we look at, is there an AI solution to that? Does it bring productivity improvements? Does it bring cost savings? Does it bring time savings? Does it bring patient satisfaction savings or quality care improvements? All those are measurable. So we have the conversation with each of those to say, okay, what is it we're trying to solve? Here's some options to do it. And here's what we think we can achieve.
Yeah. So in our conversations with other, you know, C-suite leaders, what we've heard is that this has to be like a cross-functional. You have to drive the whole thing. You have to buy in the partnership from people across all these mm-hmm. different organizations. So are you finding it the same way at Fisher Titus? And if so, then how are you tackling this, you know, problem of AI literacy? Because people might not even know, you know, every day there's a new tool. Every couple of days, there's this new release. How does anybody possibly keep up? And like you said, you're not chasing the shiny objects. You're focusing on the strategy part of it and then seeing what tools you can use. But still, you have to know what's out there. And how does anybody keep up with this fast pace of innovation that's now happening?
I don't know. You try, right? There's a couple of factors there. I mean, there's one factor in that on one hand, our leaders need AI education to help them understand just some of the basic things that they can be doing to make their lives easier, right? Exactly. Whether it's ChatGPT, transcriptions, Microsoft Loop, whatever the things are that can make their administrative lives easier. They need that education because they're really not understanding that as much as they are a vendor coming in and saying, I can solve all your problems with this new scribe or whatever it is. They get that. They don't get some of the other things. So this parallel happening with, here's how you can help yourselves, but then here's some other things we can do to bring to the organization. But also try to temper that every vendor Mm-hmm. And vendor partner, hopefully some of them end up as vendor partners because we come together and do great things, but not every one of them will be. And they all sell their shiny objects. And I have to get them to understand, okay, here's our strategy for this. Yes, mm-hmm. we'll look at that, but it may or may not fit into the ones that we've chosen because we want an integration across the whole. We don't want to have 30 different scribe solutions or 20 different quality solutions. They're pretty open to that once you explain the why. I think you really have to spend some time on the why in educating them on how great these things can be if they're done well versus just buying random shiny objects.
Yeah, I think the buy-in is the key because you know once you have that trust, then you kind of move on. But otherwise, it gets really difficult.
And isn't that the key? Trust, right? They need to trust you. We need to trust them. And that's something we had been building years ago. That's not a new thing.
So you've worked, you know, both inside health systems and with vendors like Cerner. So we're just talking about vendors. So I think this question is pertinent. So where do you think the industry, you know, still overestimates interoperability? And where are we still fundamentally constrained by these vendor ecosystems? Because most of these ecosystems are closed. Now, even with AI, people are like, how are they going to like, you know, suddenly rework everything with AI? How's that going to happen? So we heard the recent announcement from Epic that, you know, they're building now AI agents into their workspace and bringing in AI. So would love to hear your thoughts about that.
Yeah, all the EMR vendors are building AI agents. They all have it at various places, mm-hmm. as is the ERP vendors. So they're doing the same thing. So interoperability, it's been around for a long time. We've been talking about it since about 2008, probably. To some level when All Meaningful You first started coming out. I don't know, it's frustrating because I feel like we, Fisher Titus, have engaged with every opportunity to be interoperable where possible. You know, we're connected to everything. QHINs, all the stuff, we're connected to everything. But that doesn't mean the information coming through is flowing in a way that a clinician can use it best. And that's really where we still struggle. Yes, we, especially as a rural healthcare organization, it's really different for us because we don't have a closed system. So let's use a large organization like Clinic or Mayo Clinic or whatever. They have all the specialties. They have all the services within the walls of their organization. We don't. We don't have every specialty here. We don't have every single service here. So we refer a lot. So interoperability is really important for us to allow that continuity of care. But that doesn't mean all that information flows in a traditional interoperability discussion. I'll give you a great example. Maternity records. None of that information, a delivery record or a 9-month care plan for a patient, that information is not coming through on a CCDA or interoperable. Mm-hmm. So we still fax papers back and forth to an outside OB physician. So interoperability still has some work.
Yeah, that's what we've been hearing from everybody so far. And even with telehealth, you know, we thought that systems are stitching telehealth together quickly. It's going to lead to deeper EHR integration, but we've still seen these patchwork systems and, you know, problems with embedding telehealth into core clinical workflows. So what has your experience been in this? Like you were giving this example, would love to hear more and maybe.
It's the same. It's very patchworked. Like I said, we try to connect wherever possible. I'm actually on the board of directors for our state of Ohio HIE, and I'm very proud of the state of Ohio. We've done a fabulous job of getting a really robust HIE that does so many things, not just sending across the CCDAs, which we all know and love, but doing data moves for big initiatives related to population health, supporting our state Medicaid. So I think the more you can get involved at your state level, that will help as well to help them understand the bigger picture and work with your cohorts, your fellow CIOs, your fellow leaders to say, what can we all do better? It's at that level that we need to have the conversation. And then, of course, taking that to the level of any federal regulations coming through, we say, so we can start asking for exactly what we need versus what somebody who doesn't even work in healthcare proposes.
Absolutely. So we've been hearing from other health systems and CIOs that we talk to that they're really driving innovation by having these, you know, innovation arms or venture studios within their organizations. Does Fisher Titus do any of that?
No, at a rural hospital, you don't generally see that. I mean, my entire IT team is 35 people.
Okay.
That's that thing, help desk, technology, clinical analysts, informatics, trainers, cybersecurity, everything. So that's generally our innovation. Not that we don't think innovatively, but generally we're not doing a lot of in-house development, working with vendor partners. So I really strongly believe in developing good relationships with my vendor partners for that.
Linda, we saw that recently you wrote a brief for the Senate committee for the health thing. So tell us more about that. We would love to hear. What was your
role? What a wonderful experience that was. So I had the privilege of last summer of going to the Senate Health Committee and talking about rural healthcare and cybersecurity and the risks to all of us. I mean, we all have the risks. Every single one of the healthcare organizations are exposed to this ongoing onslaught of
cyber attacks.
Right? But rural healthcare has such small budgets and small resources that it's really hard for us to keep up with that and protect ourselves. And all the organizations connect through us in one way, shape, or another. You know, it's a chain. We're a link in a chain. And if we are weak, the entire healthcare chain is weak. So I'm really trying to highlight that challenge, the challenge to recruit cyber professionals here, the challenge to afford to manage third-party risk with our vendors. It was a great opportunity to talk. And actually, I'm going back to Washington this week to talk with the healthcare sector cyber working group. They're having an all-hands meeting today. So I'll be on a panel there also talking about the challenges of the world because it continues.
That's great. That's really good work you're doing, you know.
Very proud to be involved and help wherever I can.
Yeah, I read the briefing that you submitted. So that was very interesting. I thought it was well written and you made a couple of really good points. And I've been watching this show on TV right now called The Capture. I don't know if you've heard about it. And they've shown how easy it is to, you know, do this deep fakes and just get into the system. And like you're exactly like you're saying, once they just find that weakest link, that's all they need. So it's really important for the entire chain to be strong, not just, you know, you can't ignore any part of it. So,
And I think that one of the things I try to do so much of is connection and networking with others, because who in this day and age can do it on your own anymore? There's too much.
Exactly.
And so, you know, connecting with people like you and my group, my meetings and my support with Chime, who is also helping me as part of that Senate Health Committee hearing. Those relationships and your vendor relationships are so important. So as leaders, we have to stick together to kind of raise the tide for all.
Exactly. Great. So, you know, the time always goes by really fast and we are almost at the end of the podcast. So any forward-looking final thoughts you would like to share with the audience? Where do you think this all is headed? What do you think about the timeline? Where do you think we're going to be next year?
I think it goes faster than we think it's going to go, and it's really hard to keep up. I think a year from now, the conversation will be very different. We're already starting to see the shift in the reality of what AI can bring, the reality of the cost it's going to bring. My final word of advice is to take a deep breath, right? Think it through. Don't rush into 1 million shiny objects. Stick to your strategy and stick to discussing where that will benefit you. And then don't forget to take care of yourselves, because when we work at this pace, it's really hard to not just stop and take care of yourselves and regroup and refocus on your health.
Thank you, Linda. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to see you.